Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And this episode is brought to you by Covenant Eyes Filtering and Accountability Software. We have used this tool for, 10 years?
Oh, probably at least that.
It's a great tool. It's a way not only to keep your kids safe, but to teach them to keep themselves safe online.
This is really something you need to get, folks, because it's like leaving a door open to a big city in your house. Your kids can get in so much trouble online before you even know it. People tell us all the time that they've heard us talk about it and suggest that they get some accountability on their computers. And they say, well, we weren't sure which one was best. You know what? Put something on there and figure out what's best later. Mm-hmm. Your kids need some protection. It's really important.
That's right. You can try it out for 30 days, no obligation. If you go to halandmelanie.com/sponsors, click on the link over there. Covenant Eyes, because what you do online affects your life offline too. And this episode is number 121, and a blog post, I think it's going to be titled something like, Welcome to Rough House, because that's what life with boys is like. We've got 6 of them.
Oh, we really do. And you know, I remember years ago when all our boys were home, one of my friends offered to babysit while I ran an hours-long errand. And when I got back, she just looked shell-shocked. She said, how do you stand it? And I said, oh, no, were they bad? And she said, well, no, just really, really loud and active.
And that's normal. That is totally normal. It's healthy.
She had all girls, and they were just floating around the house dancing and stuff.
Right. And guys don't float. They totally don't. No. Rhinoceroses do not float. And I tell you, for me, one of the defining moments is I've got my head in the pantry, which is in our kitchen. It's actually underneath our stairway. And so I've got my head in the pantry, and one of the boys, quote, comes down the stairs, unquote. Well, you know, my reaction is everybody okay?
Incoming. You
know? I mean, what broke? It sounded like an avalanche coming down right on my head there. And, you know, think back now, many years ago when our oldest was just 5 and our friends had moved from where we all lived together down in Louisiana. They had moved to the next state over, and a few months later we had a chance to stop by and see them.
I remember that so well.
And so we pull up in the driveway and the door opens and our little 5-year-old son comes bounding out and his friend comes bounding out of the house. And then
they start rolling around in the grass. They're like fighting. And I'm like, oh no, Hal, what in the world?
Yeah,
and you stop them. They're fighting. Something's wrong.
And the other boy's mother comes out of the house, and you two moms are both going around saying, boys, boys. And me and my friend, the other dad, we come out and we're looking like, so what's the problem? And these two guys are just rolling around in the grass and, you know, growling and grunting and everything. And
I remember saying, Hal, is this normal? He hasn't seen his friend in weeks. And is this normal?
And the answer is, yeah, it's totally. This is normal guy behavior at that age.
Yeah.
Now, me and my friend Jeff, you know, we're in our late 30s. We're experienced dads and all that. We're not, we don't say.
Back then.
Back then, yeah. That's been a few years now. But you know, we don't say, hi, how have you been? And go in for the throw. I mean, that's not older guy behavior. But for younger guys, that is typical and normal and not really a cause for alarm.
You know what? It's normal behavior for brothers, even when they're older, even when they're adults.
Well, okay, yeah, there's some respects you never quite grow out of the older relationship, but people ask that, and I saw a fascinating piece of research the other day. A study was done back in the late 80s, the original study, but they took video of boys playing, boys wrestling and play fighting and whatnot. And they asked the subjects in the study, are these two boys, are they fighting or are they playing? And it was kind of neat because 8-year-old kids, children 11 years old or so, looked at them and said, oh, well, they're fighting. You know, they chose right. 85% of the time, they identified what was going on.
That's pretty accurate, not knowing the situation, just watching the video.
Just watching video of two strange kids. The dads, It was about 70%, which I found was kind of interesting that the dads didn't get it as right as the kids, the same age as those kids. But moms who had grown up with brothers also could tell the difference between playing and fighting. But they said that the women, the adult women who had not grown up with a brother, looked at those videos and almost always they said, "My word, there's a fight."
Wow.
They couldn't distinguish an actual conflict with, they're just playing. They're just wrestling around. They're having a good time. There's no need for alarm.
They really didn't know what was normal for boys.
And you know what? That is probably the case for some of our listeners.
You know, I think it's the case for a lot of our listeners. I know we sell a lot of books to people who come up and say, "I didn't have any brothers, and now I've got this little boy, and I have no idea what he's thinking." Mm-hmm. And because it's just hard. It's hard when you, for me, it's been a little bit harder to deal with our girls because I never had a sister, and I don't know what two girls together look like.
Well, okay, and maybe that's, yeah, I can see that last point. I was going to say, you have the advantage of being a former girl yourself.
True.
So you do know to some extent what they're thinking. You probably most of the time you know what they're thinking.
Right.
It's just that you know, sister to sister interaction. But
for mom who has sons and who has no brothers, though, she doesn't even have that perspective of being a boy or having been a boy herself. She really may not know what they're thinking. And I think moms are really disturbed by the amount of aggression and roughhousing and just rough play that their boys do. I think we, in our culture especially, we see those things as negatives, as bad things.
Well, it's because so much in society highlights the negative. There are real negative things sometimes. There really are bullies. There really are abusive people. There is bad violence. The problem is we've lost that grip, that understanding that there is a proper use of strength, sometimes even a proper use of aggression, or you might even say violence. And it doesn't necessarily mean a soldier who's called onto the battlefield with orders to kill or be killed. You know, just in the day-to-day life, you know, that there's a place for aggression. There's a place for the use of strength.
Even competition with another business is a kind of aggression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that aggression can be anything from, I'm going to walk in a very strong way and look confident through this dangerous part of town.
Right.
To, I'm going to fight on the battlefield. There's a full range there, you know?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've always thought about with our guys is that the play of children is really like preparation for the adult roles.
Yes.
You know, that what they do when they're playing is they are imagining themselves in situations which grown-ups might encounter. And in a way, they're sort of training themselves mentally, I'd say. You know, and so when, just like when a girl is playing with a baby doll, she is practicing some of the thinking, some of the feelings of being a mother herself one day. And when a boy is playing aggressive play, whether it's aggressive competition or wrestling with another boy or doing something like that that's physical, he's practicing for the day when he's going to be called on to protect the innocent and the weak, to provide for his family, you know, possibly to take on a role, you know, a career that calls for some use of aggression. And so, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And so I think what we have to do, I guess, first off, is understand it. And that's one of those things, you know, that study says to me is that moms, you know, be honest with yourself. Maybe you overreact to your little boy wrestling.
Yeah.
Maybe you see them wrestling and you immediately think, there's a fight. I've got to break it up. People are being harmed, when that's really not happening.
Yeah.
Did you find that was hard for you to adjust to?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just found it annoying. Why do you want to fight? Why are you constantly, you know, testing your strength against each other? I just found it annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think so that boys and moms can live happily in the same house together, we've got to have some rules.
Sure.
For example, I don't allow wrestling in our living room. Not even wrestle hugging like boys do sometimes.
Yeah.
Because two of our teenage boys were doing that one time and broke one of my favorite chairs, an antique chair.
Honest to goodness. Yeah, just the normal
They hadn't
guy
seen each other
affection.
While. They were hugging each other. One of them had come home from college or something. And they started wrestling a little bit and fell on the chair and broke it.
And that's frustrating.
Oh, I still have to forgive them again when I think about it.
How many times have they been forgiven for that?
A lot, I know. Yeah.
And
they didn't mean to.
So it's appropriate to say, guys, this is not the place for that. Take it outside. Literally. Yeah. I mean, yeah, go outside. Wrestle all you want out there in the grass.
Take it outside. Take it in the den. Whatever is a safe place in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Take it in the basement. But don't wrestle here.
Yeah.
You know, we don't allow any kind of wrestling in the kitchen because somebody might be frying something or boiling something
or carrying sharp objects. I mean, yeah. we have to say that those are truly safe spaces. We got to be safety conscious in places where there's danger of damage to things or injury to people.
So no even play fighting or anything in the kitchen. That's just not safe.
No horseplay. Okay.
Right.
And we do want to be sure that they learn to control this boisterousness. You know,
well, there's got to be a way to stop it because sometimes it gets out of hand. Somebody gets hurt or their feelings hurt and they get angry and it gets out of hand and people do start getting hurt.
And particularly when you're dealing with brothers because almost always you've got an age difference.
Yes.
And so there needs to be a way particularly for the younger and smaller in the play to say, hey, knock it off. That's our rule. I mean, our code word, if you will, is if you call knock it off, then the rule is the wrestling stops. You disengage. You check to see, is anybody hurt? Is anybody frightened? Or, you know, do we need to change something? But that call to knock it off, that's one thing. One of the things they did in the Air Force when pilots are training and they're doing aerial combat maneuvers overhead, if anybody has a mechanical problem or there's, you know, something happens that puts them in actual danger, then they call knock it off over the radio and everyone immediately disengages and puts distance between the aircraft. You know, because you don't know, is somebody about to bail out? Does somebody have a weapons malfunction or something? And so, so that knock it off, that's a good rule. Because that's one thing, you really don't want it to devolve into bullying behavior.
Right.
We probably ought to do a full story, you know, a full episode on the issue of bullying. But
yeah, but we don't want it to devolve into bullying. And so mm-hmm. the way to prevent that is if somebody says stop, it has to stop.
That's right. You know, another rule is you don't fight with girls.
Yes.
And there's so many reasons for that.
For a number of reasons.
There's so many reasons for that. Do you remember... We had a story, we did a blog post some time ago about high school wrestling, which has gone co-ed in a lot of states. It's co-ed in our state.
Wow.
It's co-ed, and I've always thought that is just crazy. Not just because girls are generally smaller, can generally get overpowered, but just the whole idea of we're going to put a young man and a young woman in a situation where his goal is to physically overwhelm the girl.
No.
And I think that is not healthy.
No, it's not healthy because young men need to be taught to protect the women in their lives. They need to be taught that you don't hit a girl. There's a noblesse oblige to strength. There's a requirement of having strength means that you have to protect the people that are weaker than you. And women are typically less strong, less large than men. They need to be protected. And so we teach our guys, you never hit a girl. You never fight with a girl. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean we won't always teach our girls not to fight, because I hope our girls will learn self-defense.
Sometimes the girl will have to defend herself against
right.
the guy who is not being a protector, who's not being gentle.
But she doesn't need to be fighting, either real fighting with her brother or even wrestling, because it's just not healthy to have two people of the opposite sex in that intimate of contact.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. So that's one of those cardinal rules. You know, everybody probably has a list of 10 rules that are just non-negotiable that you say over and over and over in your family. And that's one of the cardinal rules for us is you don't fight with girls. You don't argue with girls. Well, not in that sense. You don't fight with girls. You don't go into combat with girls.
Right. And a lot of this roughhousing is pretend combat. And that's okay. Because young men will have to face combat of one kind or another. It might be spiritual. It might be physical in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this fencing, wrestling stuff is mock combat, and I'm good with that.
You know, I was interested. We talk about this in our book, that the Puritans had their own theology. They had a theology of everything, but the theology of games and recreation, William Perkins was one of the old Puritan theologians. He wrote about this, and we quote it in our book. He, among the list of recreations which he thought were good and positive and recommended things that Christians should really consider, he included wrestling and fencing and shooting. You know, these are combat type of recreational things. They're combat training in a way. But he thought this is a positive thing because you're developing your strength. You're training yourself for things that may be appropriate, you know, in your wider life, that if you're called on to wrestle an evildoer to the ground or to fight off an attacker of some sort. And so I think that there's a good basis for saying Christians really should not be afraid of these things, just recognize the limits to them.
Now, we do have readers and listeners that are non-resistant Christians who don't believe in that, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, you can teach your children what you want them to do in your house, but in our house, mock combat is okay. Now, if you want to learn more about that aspect of it, that's covered in Chapter 4 of our book, Raising Real Men, and if you don't have it, you need to get it, because, I mean, it is seriously, it talks about all kinds of aspects of raising boys. And we're going to give you a discount. If you go out there and use the discount code podcast, you can get $250 off the book. And we'd love for you to go out there and get it, because I think it'll really help you to figure out the whys and the wherefores and the hows about this subject of dealing with aggression in boys.
It's a natural thing and it's a biblical thing. But so much of our responsibility as parents is how do we train these young men to become, as John Rosemond said, to become capable Christian men of character.
Yes.
And that's really what our goal is. We're raising men one day, not training up successful boys.
Right.
And so, yeah, we encourage you to go check that out. But, you know, that this is a lot of things. And it kind of ties in with the whole competitive aspect of boys. They are so competitive that, you know, everything becomes a contest.
Thing moms find annoying.
Well, the old cooperative play thing only goes so far with boys.
Yeah, it was definitely invented by girls. You know, the idea that for PE, we'll all go out and we'll do a cooperative game lifting a parachute up and down. That was invented by a woman.
That was not the guys. You know, you think, well, how do you score points?
Yeah.
How do you determine who wins?
And, you know, and I'm pretty competitive for a woman, but the guys are amazing. You know, they desire to try their strength, I think it was what it is, whether it's their mental strength or their physical strength or their strategy. They want to test themselves.
I think they always want to know where do they rank.
Yes.
And that's one reason I think guys respond so well to a military style organization that, hey, I know who I rank over and who I rank under. I know who I take orders from and I know who takes orders from me.
You know, I sometimes hear Christians decrying competition, though, saying that competition isn't really biblical, but I don't see that. I was looking at that just the other day, Hal. Somebody said something about they thought that games and sports were not appropriate pastimes for the Christian. I thought, hang on a minute, but the Christian life is compared to running a race.
And we're told to strive to outdo one another. And in showing good and showing honor to one another. But I mean, yeah, there's terms of competition that are used all through Scripture, particularly in the New Testament. And so, again, competition's not a bad thing. And in fact, go back to the issue of boys and girls. Yeah. Boys should not be afraid to compete with girls, and girls should not be afraid to compete with boys in the areas where their gender doesn't really make a difference.
Right.
You know? Because I trained as an engineer. I have worked with female engineers. I have worked for female engineers they were my supervisors. Absolutely no problem. It didn't diminish my manhood or diminish their femininity or anything. And that's perfectly fine. In the classroom, in the office space, on the factory floor, all those kind of things, those are perfectly reasonable places where guys and girls can compete without harming anybody. In their role or their identity or their purpose in life.
Absolutely.
So we're not people that say, you know, that there's huge divisions throughout the world, and this is all the male world over here, and this is all the female world over here. There's just a very few things that we would divide into roles. And then the rest of it is, you know, whatever seems appropriate, whatever fits at the time. But
Hal, I wanted to read this. This is from 1 Corinthians 9. It says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown." So it's comparing running a race and running to win to the Christian life. And I think that pretty much ends the discussion, that competition is appropriate. Mm-hmm. It needs to be channeled. But you can use competition to motivate them in school.
Right.
You can use it to motivate them to clean. I mean, we do that sometimes. Okay, you get this room, you get that room. Let's see who can finish first.
I think because guys really respond to honor.
Honor and challenge.
To respect.
Yes.
To glory,
yes,
if you will. And so to say, hey, I competed and I won, or I did my best. I may not have won, but I did my personal best. You know, that's a competition against yourself.
Yes.
You know, and guys really thrive on that kind of recognition. And it doesn't have to be significant. If you think about it, historically speaking, what did the winners of the ancient Olympic Games receive as a prize?
Laurel wreath.
They got a wreath.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a golden medallion. It was a wreath of leaves that would dry out and wither away. I mean, it was a perishable crown.
Yes.
Just like Paul talks about there. And you know what? That was it. That was sufficient. That was adequate to the guys that said, man, I ran faster than any other guy out here in Athens, and I get to wear the laurel wreath.
Yes.
Ray for me. And so, you know, your guys will respond to that kind of competition as well, just to say, I got the gummy bear, you know,
yes.
I got to wear the red baseball cap when we went on a field trip or whatever, you know, whatever works. It doesn't have to be, and you win a new car because you finished your textbook. No, it doesn't have to be big.
I was reading about one of those things that grown men do yesterday.
What?
That in the military, it's very common for a superior officer to give a challenge coin, a coin that represents the unit or that represents himself to someone that he thinks is doing a particularly outstanding job. And the men cherish these coins. The coins aren't really worth more than $5 or $6. But they cherish them as symbols that someone recognized that they were doing excellence.
Well, so, you know what? Your guys are competitive, and sometimes that will get on your nerves, but you can harness that to help them focus on finishing schoolwork, to focus on chores, to do other things. You know, that challenge to say, I bet you, you know, I had one of these the other day. I had one of these the other day with one of our young guys, and he had time on his hands, and I said, hey, you know what? We really need somebody to get out there and do some yard work, and I'll bet you, this is one of our younger guys, said, I don't know how if you can finish it, but I bet you can make a huge dent in that in the next hour. It's incredible how much he did.
It was amazing what he did.
It was huge, and he didn't make a big deal about it, but I think just he responded to the challenge.
He did a great job. But Hal, there are some moms out there wanting to hear about noise, and we're going to run out of time. We got to talk about noise.
Noise? Why do we have to? You know what? We had some noise recently at a conference. We were in a room next to a youth conference, and the bleed over was so bad, it was starting to interfere with conversation in our part of the hall. And I've got a sound meter on my phone, and I found out it was 90 decibels in our room. You know what 90 decibels is? That's like a lawnmower.
In the area we were, which was blocked off by walls from their area.
That's right. And you know what? We had a son who just seemed to live life at about 80 decibels.
He still does sometimes, but it was really bad when he was a toddler in preschooler.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, and they're not all that noisy. But
in fact, some boys are quiet, and that's fine. We've had a couple of quiet ones. But this one, he wasn't even one of our wilder boys, but everything he did was at the top of his lungs.
Everything was very vigorous and emphatic, and it was going to be loud and dramatic no matter what he was doing. And
yeah, playing with Matchbox cars on the floor. Everything was loud and dramatic. And I'd say, honey, could you go in the other room? Could you take that in the living room?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And he'd say, but I want to be with you.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd say, could you use your inside voice?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. And he'd be quiet for about 10 seconds. And then it was loud again. You know, I think boys just enjoy noise. I think they like the changing their environment and making a loud noise. If I ask a boy to get something out of any age, adult down to little ones, to get a pot out of the cabinet, they manage to rattle every other pot in the cabinet doing it.
I don't know why that is.
Bang, slam, pulled out. They just love noise.
And honestly, I don't have a scriptural example on that except that we are called to be patient with one another. Honestly, I've been trying to think, is there anything that scripture talks about noise? And I'm not sure.
Greet your neighbor with a loud voice early in the morning, it shall be accounted you a curse.
Well, unfortunately, we tend to have some sleepy kids, and I think I'm the loud voice early in the morning for them. But yeah, I think that's one of those things where we parents have got to say, okay, my role as a parent is to train this young person, and part of that is to train him in self-control and awareness of himself and awareness of others, and this is evidenced in his noise levels, and we've got to train and shape these things. Meanwhile, I've got to be patient.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we all grow in grace. Somebody said that marriage is like God's workshop of holiness. I think family life in general, and I think that may be why church officers preferentially should be men with families, men who have been married and who are raising children and are getting so much growth in grace right there in their own homes.
Yeah, it's not required, but boy, you learn a lot that way. It's just, and so what do you do about noise? Well, one thing is send them outside to be noisy.
Perfectly legitimate.
Although, you know, sometimes you're in a situation like us where our neighbors hate noise. They get upset if anybody makes any noise at all. It's very frustrating. You know, send them outside if you can. Set aside noisy times and quiet times.
Have you ever noticed, I don't know if you're like this, we've always had our children in the worship service with us in church. And so our kids grew up knowing how to behave and sit still and be quiet for a couple of hours, even when they were very young. But whoa, Sunday afternoon, watch out. They had used up all of their quiet.
All the quiet was gone.
And we just had to accept that. I mean, really, we found there was more peace if we just said, Sunday afternoon, they're just going to let it rip, and that's fine. We can make space for that.
Right.
Likewise, when we were traveling, we found, particularly with the younger ones, frequent stops, and stop in places where they can get out and run.
Stop at a rest area or something.
A rest area with a park, or stop at a state park along the way, or a something.
Or a town park. We've done that. We've just looked ahead and on Google and see, is there a park in this town we can stop?
Yeah. And that's, you know what? That is just recognizing that boys tend to be active. They tend to be noisy. They need to move around some. And if you give them an outlet, you can train them to be quiet and still for extended periods of time. But every so often,
they're going to bust out.
They're going to bust one way or another. So yeah. Why don't we just go ahead and plan on it and try to keep the pressure down?
And so one thing is to make room for it, make time for it. Say, okay, you can be loud. And if you have to put in earbuds, Mom, and listen to something else, sometimes I have to do that, especially if I need to concentrate, if I'm writing, or if I'm doing taxes or something. I have to put on music or Netflix or something in the corner of my screen and put my earbuds in so I can tune it out because I can't concentrate. But make a time that can be noisy. Let them know when they need to be quiet. Don't be unrealistic. That your boys, if you make them sit still and quiet all morning without a break, by the end of the morning, there's not going to be anything left for them to learn with. Mm-hmm. They're going to be so spending all their energy being still and quiet.
More and more as the day goes on.
Right.
You know, I think part of the challenge of raising boys is to recognize that God is working in them, that they are going to be men one day.
Yes.
And they are going to be different than you, Mom. They're different from you now.
And that's good.
And that's a good thing. And so we're going to be more effective if we can embrace the work in progress that God has put in our home and see how can we cooperate with what God is doing and train up these young men to be men.
To be men.
Yeah, men first. And secondly, to be men of self-control, men of consideration, men who know how to use their strengths and when to restrain their strengths. Those are all things that are part of raising up successful young men.
Well, I think if we begin to think like them, to understand how they think, we can address things better. If I want my guys to be quiet around the house, to stop bam, bam, bam every time they walk, I can say, okay, I want you to walk like a ninja or like a ranger. I want you to be a special ops soldier.
And that's much better than saying, I want you to walk on tippy toes.
No, but if you say, I want you to pretend like you're on a special op. I want you to sneak through the house. Guys are much better at sneaking than tippy toeing.
Yeah. Right.
Let them be a commando. Let them learn how, put it in ways they can understand.
Ways that they appreciate. And that affirm the value of the masculinity that God's given them.
That's right.
And so that's our advice. Yeah. Raising boys, it's a handful. Sometimes it's frustrating. Always it's going to be a commotion. And yet it's a good thing.
Yes.
And you can work it out.
And if you haven't read our book, Raising Real Men, I think it'll help you a lot on these issues. And so head out to raisingrealmen.com and click on the shop. Get the book. If you use the discount code podcast, you can get a $2.50 discount on the book. That's a really great deal.
That is. And we really want to encourage you to do that. We also want you to encourage you to go out to iTunes and subscribe to this so you'll get this thing loaded into your podcatcher week by week as soon as it comes available. And you know what? If you really, really, really like this kind of encouragement and stuff and you want to make it available for yourself and for other people, our sponsors help do that. You can sponsor us as an advertiser like Covenant Eyes, or you can become a patron through patreon.com/Hal and Melanie.
Yes, patreon.com/Hal and Melanie. The and is written out. Mm-hmm. Go out there and become a patron. We have some fantastic insider deals for people who are good enough to be our patrons.
Yeah. So look, we appreciate you spending some time with us this week, and we hope you'll join us again next week. We're always out here Monday evenings, and you can catch us on iTunes. You can catch us on the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. And until next time, I'm Hal.
I'm Melanie.
And thank you for listening.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.